Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I'd like to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. Very happy to have singer-songwriter Matt Molnar with us on this episode of the podcast. First, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much.
I love the very short bio on your website. Matt Molnar is a bona fide creative wackadoodle with multiple musical personality disorder. He's about as interesting as a pet rock and has had more jobs than Mike Rowe. Very nice.
The nature of being a creative.
Yes, absolutely. I want to talk about some Christmas songs, not just some Christmas songs, but that's the name of your collection. But there's a bunch of things that you're involved with, and they're really interesting. I want to get your takes on some of these, and we will get to the Christmas music in just a bit, because people listen to this to talk about the Christmas music. So I promise we are going to get to it. Yeah. But I just think that this is really cool. First thing, no buzzards allowed. What happens when two Arizona buzzards who don't belong find out about a magical place in Oregon? Find out and no buzzards allowed. And this is a kid's book. You have written several.
Yeah, this is my second one. And each kid's book, actually a song accompanies that as well. So the premise behind it is I write a song and then I develop a story from the song. And it's under the name Melodious Mutt, which is my pen name. And I've partnered with this brilliant artist in Scottsdale who's kind of known around the Southwest for her vibrant color schemes and really interesting take on the Sonoran. Her name's Paige Poppy. And I've always wanted to feature elements of Arizona, but my home area of Eastern Oregon, which is kind of the forgotten part of Oregon. Everybody kind of associates Oregon with the coast and Portland and all of that.
Right.
But there's a whole landscape that's quite different out here. And so I've been venturing that world, hopefully to have a whole series, maybe, 7 to 10 books in all, at least. It's quite difficult. And since I'm self-publishing but I just literally got the new song back on Friday. I released it today, the song that goes along with the book. So it's an old West Marty Robbins kind of Western song I wrote with an accordion and a fiddle. And it's kind of one of my many musical personalities.
And there aren't a whole lot of kids books that are about buzzards. Usually it's puppies and kittens, or even if you talk about farm animals, there will be cows, but you don't really get into buzzards. I would imagine that's quite a niche.
Right. And there's a scene in there where there's some javelinas and lizards and snakes. And I think it's true because we associate the buzzard as being somewhat of an outcast or some of that bird that's sort of cranky. And I always thought that would be a fun way if we could illustrate that in a more comical way and incorporate that in the idea of like, they don't really belong and they need to find a place where they're welcome. And that's my favorite lake in Oregon called Lake Owyhee. It's kind of this oasis in the middle of the desert, 55 miles long, that nobody hardly knows about in the state, except if you live over here.
I got to tell you, I think it's a great idea to focus on an animal like a buzzard because, not that buzzards are so strange, but the different sort of animals are the ones that kids love anyway. That's one of the fascinations I'm sure that kids have with dinosaurs is because they're so different. It's not the everyday thing. And I think, there was a famous Christmas song, I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas, because those are the kind of things that kids gravitate towards. So I think this is great.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
The other one, Bear in a Cage, which also has a single in a little town in the middle of nowhere, lived Henry the Bear. This is his story. Bear in a Cage.
Yeah, it's a true story. There was a big black bear that was in a cage. It was when it was a cub, it was adopted by a normal school there in this little small town and declawed, which was sad. So it could never be released. And so they stuck it in town. A guy bought it, put it in town. And I always felt really sad. And my grandma and I would always go there. It was a meeting spot between where we lived and we'd help with a picnic. And I always felt compelled to kind of want to turn him loose, even though he couldn't technically go back out in the wild. He's on a ranch now, which is nice. But it just made me sad. So I thought there was always people staring at him, and people would stop from all over the place and give him an Oreo cookie or an avocado, which I thought was weird too. It's a bear. And that was my first adventure. And I really wanted to write a song that had elements. It's a soprano sax driven song, and I really love that instrument. So it's got a little bit of pep behind that. And in the end, there's freedom involved. And each one of these books has some sort of element, freedom, belonging, something to that effect, to kind of incorporate into the story.
And, you know, not to turn this into a plug, but these are great gifts for kids for Christmas, which is right around the corner.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's these two books so far. Each of them has a single out now, Bear in a Cage and No Buzzards Allowed. These two books aren't related, but you were thinking of more books about the buzzards?
Well, more books that are in the similar vein.
Okay.
And so I may continue with that illustrator because she's brilliant, but she also has a lot going on with her business. And I may partner with other illustrators down the road too. But I want to keep in vain with the fact that every book has a song, and thus the Melodious Mutt. And next year, I think I'm going to venture into the Christmas book world, which is always risky since there's a gazillion. But I have a really fun idea that came to mind this week, actually. So I'm stoked. I'm just trying to vet it out. Writing the song is the hardest part because I can usually build the story. But yeah, quirkybirdrecords.com, they're available there. And they're neat because they're illustrated primarily by hand. And they're printed in the United States at a really small boutique. I try to do everything with small business there. We just keep it really rootsy. And they're also unique because they're 8x8, which is a strange book size. It's square, so it's very portraity. So there's some elements I try to incorporate in that. So it makes a really nice keepsake as well. Yeah, it's a fun book. I'm proud of it.
Okay. It seems like about 180 degrees from the kids' books to Clyde Punched the Preacher.
Yeah, that's another personality I probably need to get diagnosed. But basically, long story short, back in the 90s, I was involved in probably one of the most wackadoo things ever, where I watched an old rancher punch a preacher in town and church, and it was on the front page of the state newspaper. And all these years, I've been sort of wanting to play off that. I started writing a musical, but you know, unless you're linked to Broadway, like writing a musical is kind of a dead end financial
sure
concept. But I thought, why not do that and incorporate sort of a witty, fun take on music? I started off by doing a remake of a very famous song called Fishing in the Dark, where I wanted to remake it in a contemporary way and add to it. And I'm doing Elvira this coming year with the Oak Ridge Boys. And I made it like a James Brown song. And now I'm going to do a full length record on it. That's just I call it quirky groove and wit. And so I can write all of that that's in my brain that's not under Matt Molnar music. I'll stay with a more consistent music base, but I'm a lover of the old school music where you can hear the instruments, you can hear the space between the notes. It's all real players. And that's what I focus on that project too. It's fun. It's supposed to be a little tongue in cheek.
And, you know, it's interesting that you say that, and you had also mentioned with the kids' books that they're hand-drawn, and mm-hmm. just looking at some of the images on the website, I didn't know that they were hand-drawn, but I recognized the difference, because so much of that kind of thing is computer animation now, and right. whether that's the nature of the business, or that's today's technology, or whatever you want to say, I'm not knocking that, but there's definitely a difference. And that carries through with what you're saying about Clyde Punch the Preacher as well. You want it to be real. And it's just amazing to me what a difference that makes when you either look at, you know, an illustrated children's book that was, I don't want to say churned out, but that was, you know, that's computer animated, or
right.
or you can hear plenty of songs on traditional radio today where 17 people work together to write it, and there's one voice in there, and the rest is all coming out of machines.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, auto-tune is the new thing. And the thing about it is like within the book, there are a few images where we had to use a little bit of a digital imposed just to get the sign right. But it's really important musically, I always remember that line from a writer who said, you know, we miss the space between the notes, and you know, compression and all of that is so heavily used in pop music, especially. I just really like getting back to trying to record and do music in a way that's as organic as possible, like they did in the 60s, minus using a tape. I don't want to use tape, you know, that's a real pain, but like anything else is like that. Sometimes I do an entire recording of the song, just all live players. You know, we just, the first time they've ever heard it, we record it like a Nashville session. And so, and then it allows them to breathe into it. And all their years of hard work and their intelligence and their musical gifts get to be a part of it. And it makes my music better.
At what point with the idea for children, with the songs and the children's books and Clyde Punched the Preacher, at what point in the mix of all of that did you think, I want to record some Christmas songs?
Clyde Punched the Preacher was born after the fact. I'd been flirting with the children's stuff for a long time. The children's record came out several years ago. I tabled it and like rebranded it with a new cover. The cover of that CD is done by my illustrator, and that's a hand-drawn cover. And I wanted something that was sort of, you know, just real and just simple. And I'll tell you, probably I was so scared to embark on Christmas music. It's like singing the national anthem. You can really screw up your career if you do that wrong.
Yeah.
And it's taking on Christmas music, because like your mind has Sinatra's Jingle Bells in your head, or Bing's, you know, White Christmas. Those are arrangements that sort of live. And then there's been a million of them processed since then. And I thought, if I'm going to do that, like, I've got to rearrange it. Like, it's got to be a complete adventure. Every track has to be different instrumentation. I still got to keep the context of the melody. And I just, it was quite an adventure. And it ended up, I'm really proud of it, but I was really scared. Sometimes I still get scared listening to it.
Oh, and you got to deal with the ghosts of everybody who has recorded when you're doing covers.
Right.
You have to, you know, it's almost like they're there in the studio with you. One of the songs on your album, Some Christmas Songs, is Do You Hear What I Hear? And I'm sure for a lot of people, they think of Bing Crosby.
Yeah.
When you mention that song, that has to be daunting, that I'm going to sing this song that Bing Crosby sang. Or if they're younger, they think of Whitney Houston.
Right.
Again, really big shoes to fill.
It's true. Yeah. With that track, like I was going to sing that. And then I realized I hired a vocalist who works with me. She was on tour with Pink Martini. I don't know if you're familiar with that band, years ago. Yeah. She's a background vocalist. I've used some of their players, and I wanted her to sing it. So I wrote it from a context of making it very syncopated. I wrote the bass line first of all things before I did anything. And then I thought, I don't think I can pull that off. I don't think I feel comfortable with my arrangement. So I asked if she would do it, and she agreed, thankfully. But you're right. Like, it's like, oh my goodness, did I do justice to Silver Bells? I mean, I took it from 3/4 time and made it into a Latin kind of chipmunky thing. And like, is that going to make people angry at me? You know, I got to sing it my way. You have to sing it your way.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You can't sing it. The more, I think what happens in a lot of Christmas songs, I listened to a lot several years prior to doing it. And then I went on a complete fast. Chuck Mangione used to say, like, you got to fast from music while you're writing it and arranging it, so you don't plagiarize. And I just remember, like, I don't have that particular, I'm not a crooner, or I'm not, you know, maybe I'm a little musical theater here, maybe I'm a little country there, and I've got to find, like, how can I sing this without it making everybody angry at me, you know, and liking it.
Yeah, Christmas music especially, out of all the musical genres that there are, people are really weird about it. Either they're so excited that it's a new interpretation of Silver Bells, or they're, how dare you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I have this really fun version of Silent Night that Dr. John did. It's very New Orleans. It's not at all like what you would think of with Silent Night, but it's really cool. And every year when I play that on the Sounds of Christmas, I'll get an email from somebody who's so upset that I did that. And it reminds me of the stories of when Elvis did his Christmas album, and people were upset that the king of rock and roll was singing. How blasphemous!
And, oh, that's right. And that's true.
And they think they, and it still goes on today. How did you narrow down to the covers that you chose to do?
Well, I didn't want to do like a 10 song record for the sake of like just the sheer amount of energy. Like I thought, because I'd like to do a follow up, and I thought five covers and then an original. And I don't know if I'd ever tried an original again, because that was a hard one to write. I almost had to write it from a kid's perspective. You know, I didn't want to write a schmaltzy, another one of those, you know, or like a kind of a, I just couldn't write that. I mean, some other guys could, but I can't. So I want to do fun. I always wanted to like We Three Kings. I love that, the darkness of that, the melodically. And I thought it'd be cool if that was a spy theme, you know, like that's gotta be a spy theme, you know? And then I always thought, God Rest You Merry Gentlemen should have like a jazz interlude with like a Middle Eastern scale in it. That'd be really fun, because it's like, it doesn't need to be so square. And then Little Drummer Boy, I'm sorry to say, like, I'm not really fond of like a lot of the original versions. Although Ray Conniff, you know, is kind of iconic, but I really wanted to do a white funky kind of version of it where I had a dirty horn section. And how am I going to do that? And like, I want the bass solo in Little Drummer Boy. And so I just started picking like ones that I'm not particularly fond of that song otherwise, you know, done squarely. So that's kind of how I did it. And then I eliminated a couple, and then I actually wrote arrangements down the road. I'm going to do those later on, hopefully. It's quite an endeavor to do another one, to get everybody together and do it. I do it in a big studio. I don't do anything at home. So I rent a, you know, world-class studio and do it that way. But it was challenging. And then I'll be brief, but when I finally started to hear what was coming out of my brain, and a lot of those songs came out with bass lines first for some reason. I'm a really funky piano player, kind of weird almost. And it just started, oh, these are the ones. And then that was it. You know, I didn't even listen to anything after that. I just 6 months of those, period.
You know, I talked to a lot of artists on this podcast about, you know, how they narrow things down. And it is tough because it's not simply a covers album,
right,
where you're picking your favorite. Oh, I love that, you know, that classic Glen Campbell song, or I love the Eagles, or whatever else. It's not that simple, because you pick one of these and there's so many artists attached to it and so many different versions that you got to walk that fine line of doing the song justice, but making it sound like you. And I think that a lot of singers and musicians fail at that second part. And I don't know if it's because they're not really into it and they just want to record this and be done, because my manager said I got to record a Christmas song. So here's another Jingle Bell Rock.
Point. Yeah.
Or they feel that weight of, I don't want to change it because I don't want to make people mad.
Yeah, it's jumping out of your mason jar. Like, I'm not afraid. Like, I released a version recently of Battle Hymn of the Republic, and I took it and took my favorite two verses and just did a New Orleans funk thing and just totally did it that way. And I know, like, I'm going to have some people get really, whoa, you know, like, well, it needed that, man. It needed something, you know? And I think that's why I always go back to the 70s a lot, because I think there was so much cool experimentation in the 70s musically, so many neat things coming out of that era musically. That's what you have to do with, you almost have to approach a Christmas record as if it's musical theater. It's got like every track. I know a lot of artists like to keep in context of who they are. Like, I don't want to, you know, my fans expect, but this is the one time you have some liberty. Like, you can stretch the limit. If you got the ability to do that, do it. And not too many have, you know, in my opinion. There's some legendary records, but, and I get excited about some of those songs, but yeah.
I think a lot of people are, I don't know if they don't want to get out of their comfort zones, or they're just worried, because so many people treat these songs as sacred works.
Yeah. Reverence.
Whether it's Oh Holy Night or whether it's Silver Bells, that this is how this song is supposed to go. And a lot of people don't want to deviate from that. But I think the best versions are the ones that do. Wilson Pickett did an amazing version of Silver Bells for an 80s Christmas compilation, and there's a lot of guitar in it, and it sounds like a Wilson Pickett song. And it's one of those that you listen to it and it's really cool, and you're realizing that you know all the words, and then at some point you go, wait a minute, this is Silver Bells.
Yeah. Well, that's really an amazing job on the end of the artist to be able to do that, to make it as if they would have maybe written it. Yeah. You know, like you, and I've been known, like my Matt, I have another side, like my Matt Molnar music, I've kind of gone all over the place. Like I have anthem type jazz tracks, and then I have, like, you know, really slow. I mean, it's all over the place. And so it fit within that context. I've never been afraid to experiment. And that's kind of what I was known for. It's just like, wow, he's just going to go that direction again, or you never know what's coming out of his CD player. And I had to wrangle that into some of my other personalities. But yeah, you just hope that when they listen to it, like it fits in with others in their mix. That's what I want more than anything. I want them to be like, oh, I still want to listen to Blue Christmas and all those things, you know, by Elvis or something. But I want to listen to Matt's like version of that one. Like, I like that there's three versions of it now that I like. And that's important to me.
And as somebody who programs a lot of this Christmas music, it's certainly important to me because I want to be able to play different versions of Silver Bells. And I don't want listeners to go, oh, there's that song again. Because, you know, Christmas music gets such a, it's the only genre I know of that people have such a love-hate feeling towards it. And I think part of the hate comes from a lot of what traditional radio does, where they play the same short list of songs over and over. So you hear Bing's White Christmas, and that, and you hear it every other hour. In between that, you hear Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You. And both of those artists did a lot of other songs, and a lot of other people have covered those two songs. And it would be more interesting to the listeners if you play different versions of those, right? But it doesn't happen. And I really like your version of Silver Bells. I think it's one of my favorite Christmas songs, and I think it's a great and different version to add to the, you know, I don't want to say the Great American Christmas Songbook, maybe, I don't know, but
yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, I'm really proud of that track. I get a lot of people who like that song too, because it's a spirited lyric. I mean, of course, a lot of those great lyricists back then anyway. I lament the fact that they're not around, you know. There was a lot of great stuff being written back in the day. But, and it, that one lend itself, probably one of the easiest for me to feel the rearrangement. The others were a little bit more challenging to my brain. That one just started to come in when I started playing it for some guys. They were like, oh, we, you know, keep going with that. And it was nice having the juxtaposition of her voice in there with me too. But yeah, super fun. I appreciate that. Many years ago, when I was a small market radio disc jockey, they gave me the liberty of having a Christmas show for a couple of years, as long as I didn't get paid for it. And so I did it. And my goal was sort of Dr. Demento-ish, I guess, you know, to always have, like, introduce you to all kinds of Christmas wonkiness, whether it be, you know, from the traditionalist to Weird Al to whoever. And I just wanted people to know, like, the genre is big. It's actually quite inventive if you really look. That's why, like, your site's so cool, like these sites that exist out there now in the internet land. That's really fun that you can get a chance to hear that, because you're not going to hear it on mainstream.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I started in traditional radio, and I was the new guy at the first station I worked at, so I was working almost all day Christmas Day that first year, they brought me a huge box of 45s. And they were all Christmas singles, and they said, you know, we're all Christmas, play whatever you want. So I discovered so many things in there that I'd never heard of before. I had no idea these artists did Christmas songs, and that was a lot of fun. And later, when traditional radio started to recognize that people wanted to listen to Christmas music a lot more than what they'd been given, and they started to go all Christmas, I was excited about that because I love Christmas music, but then it's the same songs. And that's one of the reasons I started the Sounds of Christmas, because there's so much more out there that just doesn't get played. And I think my library has around 15,000 songs in it. I can't play them all every December, but I play a lot of them, and you're not going to hear the same ones over and over, but it gives you it gives you that chance to hear some of these different versions. And it's exciting to me that I've got five new ones from you to add into this mix to give people another take on some of these great songs. And then to add to that, there's also your original track, Christmas at Grandma's House. And I think you had mentioned that this is like from a child's point of view.
Yeah, it's kind of a rumba. And I have an amazing sax player on that, Renato Caranta, who was on tour with Esperanza Spalding and Merle Haggard, and just a phenomenal player. And I thought, man, if I'm going to do that, I don't want to do like another Elmo and Patsy song or something like that. You know, I wanted to do something that would maybe kids would like to. And so my grandma was a Polaroid addict. And so she just took a gazillion pictures, and we had to dress in red sweaters and green dresses. And, you know, and it was just that old school 70s vibe. I thought, well, let's put that into some kids today and see if they would dig that. The kids have liked it. I know there's like, that's probably kind of a generic title per se, but it fits. And it's the style of music that I thought if kids would listen to it, they would dig it too, because they're not used to hearing that style of music, you know.
And any kid who is lucky enough to have a grandma that they go to see at Christmas can identify with it, because it is sort of general. Christmas at Grandma's House can easily evoke whatever your memory is of Christmas right. at your grandma's house. And this also makes me think, and just the short time we've been talking, that this should probably be a kid's book too.
Yeah, you know, I thought about that. In fact, my next kid's book is going to be a Christmas book, and it's based on another song that I'm not quite finished up with. It's really fun. That if I can get it out next year, I will, for sure. It's really fun. Yeah.
So this album is called Some Christmas Songs, and it came out, I believe, 4 years ago, and it had to be pretty cool to see it on USA Today's holiday music list.
Yeah. Now that's that. When this originally was released, it came out probably, I guess, late 2009, somewhere around there. And then I got national press in USA Today. I didn't even send it to Brian Mansfield. Somehow he got a hold of it and reviewed it on my behalf, which was even cooler. Yeah. And then I sent out like 250 copies, old school CDs and bright red packaging with brilliant whatever, to every reviewer I could get. And it went great. It just didn't translate into any, like, a big fan base or getting played. And so I decided to table it for a while and just tuck my tail between my legs and then rebrand it. And it was kind of disheartening, because it was so much, you know, neat to have these jazz reviews and these different people like it. And I even sent it to a guy, a reviewer, hates Christmas music and is vile against it. And he actually said it was something he put in his playlist because it was so different. So I was kind of like, I thought I was going to get crucified just for fun. You know, I guess bad press is good press, or any press is good press. But that's when I just quit for a while on it, came back, rebranded, put it out again, and have been, you know, getting some good feedback across the world now. So sometimes you have to do that.
So there's more Christmas music in the works.
Right. Yeah. And another follow-up, six songs, five covers and an original. I want to do the first Noel. I have this incredible arrangement of the Coventry Carol, which is a sad song, but it's really fun. And then I don't know if I should do it, but I want to do Feliz Navidad. And that's another one you could probably, somebody might slap me for doing, but because everybody loves Jose Feliciano's version, but his live version is actually my favorite version of that. If you ever get a chance to hear that, it's incredible players on that.
And so the energy of that is amazing. The live one.
Yeah. The live version just is, oh my goodness. It's just amazing song. Yeah. And I thought, well, how could I do that without, you know, making his fan base mad at me? But I'm going to experiment, and hopefully I can do it this year. There's no guarantees. Maybe the year after. It's a hard endeavor for an independent like myself.
Well, you've got new Christmas music on the way. If you check out, I don't remember which website it was on. There's also a couple things that you have teased for 2023, Middle-Aged Train Wreck and The Compact Life, two different things. Are those still on the way next year?
Yeah. Middle-Aged Train Wreck is going to be a song. It's going to be an album and a book. It's about an unfortunate, my experience with divorce and infidelity. And so I wanted to write about that from a man's perspective in a really humorous, witty way. And so it's not your average book in that world. And so I decided to write an album with it, with songs like If I Look Like George Strait, and just songs about being someone who's going to hit the mid-century mark next summer, and trying to make it fun too. You know, it's okay to laugh. We need more laughter.
I'm sure to anybody who's listening to this, they hear all these different things you're in, and I don't want to keep bashing traditional radio, but I can't help it. Yeah. Traditional radio likes to put artists in a box and say, this is what you're about. And if you come out of that, everybody's going to be upset. And it's so crazy because all of us have so many different things that we enjoy, that we like, that we're passionate about, whether it's writing kids' books or performing these kind of songs, or we're into those kind of songs. I don't think anybody just likes one particular kind of music. There's so many, and you find what you like. And that's certainly what we're seeing today with streaming, because you can put together a playlist of, you know, you can have James Brown and Garth Brooks and Run DMC and Taylor Swift all on the same list. And nobody says anything because that's what you like.
Yeah. Yeah. I never did understand. I mean, I guess I get it from the marketing standpoint. And I went to college in Nashville at Belmont University, so I know the scene there. I get it. You know, I'm not a dummy. That's why I moved back out west and started my music exploration company, because I wanted to make a lot of mistakes, and you can't make mistakes there. And I felt compelled to, like, I'm never going to make records unless I leave those markets, you know, and whether or not I'm able to do it all the time. And get the hardest thing for me is getting gigs, because, you know, certain places have an expectation of what they want, a cover band. And I'm not a cover band, you know, and
yeah,
it's hard. Like, I haven't been able to get a show in so long from anybody, and I could put together amazing players, you know, but, and give you an energy that'll knock your socks off, but it's hard to break that. So I just decided to release just tons of music over the years and find those niche people that like it, you know.
With all these things in the works, what's next? Or is there something, or do you work at more than one at once?
Yeah, I'm kind of a multitasker in that regard. I'm trying to scale that back a little bit, because writing a book is really hard in itself. But all of this really is not like as magical as everybody thinks it is. Like, when you hear those stories, like, it's really about the discipline and the rewrite. Like, a song, he goes through so many rewrites with me before I'm ever comfortable of ever. And I do a lot of, I walk miles and miles and hike a lot, and I'm out, I'm a loner, so I'm by myself a lot. So I write, and so I have to keep a lot of things going at once in my brain, because sometimes the children's book's done, and I'm not working on I'm already working on the next one. But it's just maybe one day a week. And then the other day is writing the book, and then, you know, writing a new album. I took 3 days, watched a house for somebody and their dog, and worked on an album for like 35 hours or so. And so whatever, I got to keep it going all the time, you know, with, sometimes people have to rein me in. Don't tell me to, you know, take a step back and stop this madness. But I mean, that's how I'm wired. I can't help it. It's just how my brain works.
You know, I think the truth is that that's how a lot of people work, but we're taught or told that you need to just do this, and you need to do these approved things, and don't step out of the box. And, you know, and then you see somebody like you who are constantly out of the box doing so many different things that you love. And frankly, I think it's inspiring.
Oh, I appreciate that, because I often wonder if I just need to be committed, because most of it's never rewarding financially in that world. You know, so many, that's another mistake that people have in their minds about how it works. And I don't do it for that. I've been doing it for so long. I have so much more to give that until my brain doesn't have the capacity to do that, I'm going to keep doing it. And I'm so thankful I had was exposed to like Dixieland jazz when I was five. And then I listened to like The Clash. And then I listened to like Merle Haggard, you know, all that just made me like be interested in all kinds of wonkadoo stuff. Roger Miller is one of my favorites. And, you know, he could write a serious ballad and then write Dang Me, you know, like, why not? You know, well, that he wouldn't get on the radio today. We know that. But, you know, I just got to keep going with what I feel comfortable in. And Quincy Jones used to say, you've got to make a lot of mistakes before you get to the good stuff. And I've done that mainly on the branding side. But I come up with some stupid names. But now I've got that figured out. Took me a while, but I just keep on keeping on.
What's the best way for people to keep up with you?
This is where I get criticized. I have no social media and I don't own a smartphone. And so you can go on to like quirkybirdrecords.com. And I think there's a little subscription thing I put on there for my Shopify store. You can just put your name in there and I'll send you personal emails once in a while from me. Just, I'm old school. I like to write to you, send you a quick note, send you some free music. You'll get something free from me if you just go on to quirkybirdrecords.com and drop your name in there. I won't spam you. I won't send you pictures of me. That would be awful. And like, you know, like I just want to keep it lighthearted and fun. And then there's several websites, you know, you can usually find them through there. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's, I think that's where I went, and there are easy to find links to all the, I won't say all, but many of the different things that you're, that you're into and that you're working on. It's very cool. Matt, thank you so much for spending some time with us and talking about all of this.
Oh, I appreciate you and people like you taking risks and starting these ventures too, and helping feature us little quirky birds out there. So you're appreciated this season.
Thank you. And thank you so much for listening and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. Our new season is well underway, so whenever you're ready for Christmas music, we're ready for you. Just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. You can also find our app in the Google Play Store and take the music with you wherever you go. And as far as the podcast goes, we're now on over 30 podcasting sites, so if you didn't find us on your favorite today, just search for the Sounds of Christmas next time you go there, and I'm pretty sure you'll see our tree. Then you can subscribe and you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.